have tuned in to Talon Mark's Campus News Hour on WPMD.org, Cerritos College Radio on the net, bringing essential student body information, news, sports, and the arts to the entire Cerritos College campus community. Here are your hosts, Campus News Hour Director Tito Benavides and Managing Multimedia Editor Lucia Sarabia.
Today is April 18th, 2012. Welcome to the 13th edition of Talon Mark's Campus News Hour for the spring semester, bringing you news and information campus-wide. I'm your host, Tito Benavides. Good morning, Falcons. The Cerritos College Phi Beta Lambda Business Club competed in the 2012 State Business Leadership Conference in March. The future leaders of America met at the Los Angeles Radisson for the sake of meeting like-minded business students. Assistant Sports Editor Martin Calderon reporting.
Members of Cerritos College's Phi Beta Lambda Business Club were among many community college, Cal State, and university students that represented their school in competitions held at the 2012 State Business Leadership Conference at the Radisson Hotel in Los Angeles, California, on March 30th and 31st. Future Business Leaders of America, Phi Beta Lambda, is a nonprofit education association with 250,000 students preparing for careers in business and business-related fields and is the largest business career student organization in the world. The conference began Friday morning at 11:30 a.m. in the Cerritos College parking lot as students met with the club's advisor, Professor Jerry Ramos, to organize carpool arrangements in order to get to the hotel. Upon the club's arrival to the Radisson Hotel, the lobby was quickly filled with other students from various colleges, including UC Berkeley and the University of Southern California, all for the Leadership Business Conference and all waiting to check into their rooms. With some downtime before the conference's opening reception, Ramos ordered a quick lunch for all the members of Cerritos College's PBL, which was also a chance for students like Business Administration and Marketing major Noel Diaz to get acquainted with fellow members. Diaz talks about his goals for the conference.
Pretty much just context, and that's what's really important, you know? That's basically why I came here, because I'm pretty sure that we are pretty much the future right now. You know, we're college students right now, but, you know, where are we going to be in 10 years? And having those contacts is just, you know, convenient.
After the break, the PBL chapters from all over California came together for the opening reception, where a keynote speaker talked about the positive impact that a near-death experience had on his life. The mood changed once the reception's next event was held, which was the Miss PBL competition, where female members had a chance to display their ability to answer impromptu questions and display personal talents. Math major Raquel Ramirez entered the event as a representative of Cerritos College and received a few confused looks from the audience when she introduced the poem she was going to recite titled, "Let's Face It, English is a Stupid Language." Ramirez talked about the outcome of her decision to recite the poem.
In the end, I got a lot of people thinking about the different paradoxes and the contradictions in the English language. I got a lot of laughs out of them, and so I think it ended up being pretty successful.
The first night of the conference was capped off by a social mixer that was held in a banquet hall at the hotel and included music played by a DJ as well as refreshments. The mixer was aimed at encouraging PBL members to share business ideas with the members from other colleges. Business management major Jose Abarca explains his reasons for participating in the mixer.
I signed up to get a different feel for what business like-minded people are like, you know, and I think like a businessman, I tend to appreciate other minds that think alike. PBL has been, it's something new to me. I'm looking forward to staying with the program. I've been here for a week. I use this program to help me better myself in the business world.
Day two of the conference started with the business-themed competitions from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., along with workshops in several different areas of business career that were interweaved into the schedule. Students competed in events that tested their business knowledge and skills and ranged from topics like macroeconomics to contemporary sports issues. Competing members were judged based on content, organization, delivery, and even had points deducted if the dress code was not properly followed. When they were not competing, they had the option to participate in workshops that were aimed at leadership skills, business management, and personal growth. Cerritos College students won several accolades in the competition portion of the conference, including Kim Lang Lee's first place award for accounting analysis and decision making, along with ASCC President Jasmine Ramirez's third place in sales presentation and performance. Jonathan Almos won second place in telecommunications, and the team of Adriana Vargas, Jason Macias, and Raquel Ramirez won fourth place in economic analysis and decision-making. The winners were announced at the awards and reception ceremony as the weekend came to a close on Saturday evening. The top placing contestants at the state level are eligible to represent their colleges at the National Conference, which will be held June 24th through the 27th in San Antonio, Texas. Cerritos College was the second college in California to register Phi Beta Lambda at its school back in 1960. Edgar Ramos, president of PBL at Cerritos College, encourages students of all majors to join the club because of the benefits that it has to offer. A good example of this idea is film and television production major Juan Estuvier, who has his own production business and mentions how this conference can benefit him.
I like to see how other business-oriented people operate, just more strictly on the business end as opposed to the artistic side.
He goes on to talk about his favorite part of the conference.
Definitely meeting everyone. Although the workshops and everything has been really fun, the people here have been amazing.
For Talon Marks Campus News Hour, this is Assistant Sports Editor Martin Calderon reporting.
Holding true to its responsibilities, members of the ASCC have brought attention to alleged incompetence of ASCC student director Holly Bogdanovich. An extensive five-month absence without representation to the students of the ASCC and the lack of transparency and non-existent rules that have stopped students from implementing live performances and other activities. Editor-in-Chief Vic Diaz reporting.
With claims from students of frequent absences and a lack of transparency in advising, ACC Director of Student Activities Holly Bogdanovich is being placed under the magnifying glass by members of the Cerritos College student government. ASCC President Jasmine Ramirez issued an address during a meeting of the ASCC Senate on April 11th, stating the student government's concerns with Bogdanovich's performance. Ramirez explained the purpose of her address.
The purpose was to express concern to the senators on the issue that our director has not been here for 5 months and has failed to do their respective duties while they have been here. It has been very hard for us to fulfill our duties without the proper guidance from the director, which is necessary. And we feel that even when she is here, it is not in the best interest of the student body.
ASCC Vice President Julian Del Real Calleros elaborated on Ramirez's claims of Bogdanovich's presence not benefiting students.
When we actually dig into our constitution and we find out a whole bunch of things that we were not allowed to do, but yet we could do based on the context of our constitution, and what's not mentioned in our constitution goes with what goes into Robert's Rules of Order or the Brown Act.
Ramirez continues to explain.
Our director failed to teach us and educate us in anything in regards to student government. We didn't know parliamentary procedures. We didn't know Brown Act. We were kept ignorant. It really was hard for us to be able to get anything done while she was here because it was a constant, we can't do this, we can't do that. And now we've come to realize that we can. And it's very unfortunate that we wasted a whole semester just because we were told that we couldn't. And it's not so.
She also mentioned that one of the concerns she had is about budget transparency. Ramirez requested information regarding expenses made on behalf of the ACC and did not receive it.
We did not know certain accounts that we had, and unfortunately that made it very difficult for us to be able to give transparency to our student body.
Bogdanovich recently returned from a five-month medical leave, but according to Ramirez, continues to leave on certain days and not return for the remainder of the week. Student trustee Errol Hughes believes that this issue could have been approached in a more professional manner.
I do believe that when you do bring up issues, and especially when it's talking about someone's occupation, you should really make sure that the person is there so that they can vouch for themselves.
Okay, so do you believe that maybe the way they're going about the system, they're doing it incorrectly, or?
The thing is, they're trying to just come upon with fire and just blurt everything out to the public, which I think that there should be probably a meeting or mediation before that had happened. That way it doesn't look as bad, because if someone's just coming out and already voicing about somebody else's job that they may not know all the details because they haven't talked to the person exactly yet, maybe that might be the wrong thing because you don't know the full story. And the thing is, when you look at situations like this right now, you have to look at both sides and you have to come to a compromise and understand that. And I think that either groups or either individuals need to talk to each other because there's a lot of misunderstandings, there's a lot of misinterpretation, there's a lot of things that were found out that were unknown, and questions need to be answered.
AACC Court Justice David Kerr claims to remain impartial to the issue that is taking place, but believes that if necessary, rules and bylaws need to be enforced if there is indeed a violation.
There's always two sides to every story, and everybody has their, you know, opinions, but like I was saying, if she really needs to, she knows whether or not she really needs the time off. It's a doctor's excuse to always work. It'll get you out of, you know, some lectures, but you can't take that and say, sorry, I missed three tests because the doctor said I had to stay home. Well, what happens then? You fail the class, right? Those are the rules. There are rules you have to abide by.
Del Real Calleros hopes to see some clarity after this issue is over.
Personally, I feel that we can get a scene that either Ms. McDonough could, our director could see that, you know what, maybe I need to change the way I conduct my work. Maybe I should change the way how my behavior towards student advocacy, or maybe this is not the line of work for her.
According to Del Real Calleros, it is up to the Senate to issue a vote of no confidence, at which point Ramirez can file a grievance on behalf of the student body. Del Real Calleros also said that the Senate can file a recommendation to the Cerritos College Board of Trustees to review Bogdanovich's contract with the college before it can be reviewed. Bogdanovich was unavailable for comment. For Talonmark's Campus News Hour, I'm Editor-in-Chief Vic Diaz reporting.
This week's Talonmark's Campus News Hour pro and con opinion articles focus on the cheerleading squad here at Cerritos College. Assistant Arts Editor Alexa Bazua gives her view on how the Falcons cheerleading squad should cheer for all Falcons teams.
The Cerritos College cheerleaders only cheer at the men's football and basketball games, when in reality they should be cheering for every sport. Cheerleading was invented for the sole purpose of supporting its teams through organized chants, dances, etc. So it should do its job and do so for every team. Cheerleaders should have to cheer for all teams because it makes football and basketball seem more important than any other sport. Not only does it make those two sports seem higher prioritized, it also makes it seem like men's sports deserve more recognition and support than women's. Many times, family members will attend a game or event to cheer on only one athlete. While that may be good for that one athlete, it does not support the team as a whole. And that is what cheerleaders are there to do, to encourage the whole team to win. Some might say it's annoying to have them cheering because the audience wants to just focus on the game. What about all those people around you being loud? Some want to focus on the game, sure, but there are also people that are there to have fun. The crowd gets loud, it gets rowdy, so what's wrong with having cheerleaders there? If they bothered people so much, the crowd would leave, but it doesn't. Sometimes the crowd doesn't even get into the game, and afterward it wonders why the team lost. Support from fans helps motivate the athletes to do their best, and they can get it at every single game from the help of cheerleaders. Just as cheerleading has evolved from being male-dominated to female-dominated, cheerleaders should move on from cheering just for football and basketball to cheering for every sport. For Talonmark's Campus News Hour, this is Assistant Arts Editor Alexa Bazua reporting.
And with an opposing view on the ever-looming cheerleading question, sports editor Lauren Gandara counters with her own opinion on how the Falcons cheerleaders have enough on their pom-poms to keep them busy enough all season long.
Cheerleaders are athletes themselves and cheer at enough sporting events already. Therefore, it is best if cheerleaders just stick to cheering for the two main sports they cheer for, football and basketball. It takes cheerleaders all summer to come up with routines, chants, and band dances to perform during big school functions and football and basketball games. They spend the summer also learning about the basic fundamentals of the two sports so that they can call out cheers during plays. There are 19 sports at Cerritos College, both men's and women's. How do you cheer at a wrestling tournament? P-I-N, pin him, pin him. I don't think so. To have to learn about all these sports and remember the fundamentals of every sport would take more than just a couple of months in the summertime to learn and memorize. Plus, cheerleaders have their own events that they need supporting at. In the winter and springtime, cheerleading teams participate in cheerleading competitions. These competitions have become popularly known, especially after all of the Bring It On movies that they keep making that keep getting lamer and lamer. These girls are hardcore athletes that have to practice constantly in order to win. It's a lot of work and pressure, and to add on to that, having to cheer at even more sporting events that the team isn't even paying attention to begin with? How fair is that to the cheerleaders? Most cheerleading squads don't even cheer for all the sports in high school or grade school. I've heard of the Laker girls and the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, but I've never heard of the Dodger girls or the LA Kings cheerleaders. For Telemark's Campus News Hour, I'm sports editor Lauren Gondada reporting.
Cerritos College placed in several competitive heats at the Mount SAC Relays Invitational. The Falcons took the top three spots and the races. News editor Enrique Rivera reporting.
Seven Falcon men and women runners earned top three spots in their races during the Mount San Antonio Relays Invitational on April 14 at Mount San Antonio College. Sophomore Brandon Hendrickson took second place in the 110-meter hurdle. Freshman Hadija Hall took first place in the 100-meter dash second heat. Sophomore Seth George took third place in the 110-hurdle first heat. Sophomore Juan Tapia took first place in the 400-meter dash first heat. Sophomore Mitchell Ramirez took first in the 400-meter dash second heat. Sophomore Lily Trin took third place in the 400-meter hurdle. And sophomore Dominique Pearson took third place in the 400-meter shuttle hurdle. The Falcon men's team also took first place in the 4x110-meter shuttle hurdle. The team consisted of sophomore Sean McCoy, freshman Jared Lipscomb, Seth George, and Brendan Hendrickson. Hendrickson raced in two events and took second place in the 110-meter hurdle. Hendrickson feels that his goal for the next race is to perform better than the runner from Mount SAC, who took first place. Not having to fight the wind would have been something that could have helped to place in the top five, according to sophomore Aaron Colby, who placed 8th in the 400-meter dash. Freshman Jonathan Lynn is currently ranked 14th.
I just know what I'm ranked, and I'm only worried about myself for today, not really my opponents, and I'm just going to try and get my own personal best time for today.
He placed 12th in the 5,000-meter run. Sophomore Daniel Herrera, who didn't race in the Invitational, was pleased with his teammate's performance.
Everyone seems to be stepping up and PRing at the right time. The coaches do a really good job of making sure that we're running fast when we need to be, and we're close to conference and we're starting to run really fast.
Herrera spoke about Mitch Ramirez, who had an injury in the beginning of the season. Ramirez took first place in the 400-meter dash.
And he was injured for the beginning of season, so for him to be running that fast at this point is crazy.
The conference matchups begin in 2 weeks at Compton. The next Invitational is on April 20th to 21st at Cerritos College. For Talent Marks Campus News Hour, this is news editor Enrique Rivera reporting.
With the continual and unstoppable progression of technology in our daily lives, registering for class without disrupting one's daily responsibilities by utilizing the available iPhone, iPad, and other app-driven devices. With the creation of a mobile registration website, Cerritos College would be participating in the modern world that surrounds it. Campus NewsHour Director Tito Benavidez reporting.
The creation of a mobile registration site here at Cerritos College for the sake of convenient signing up for classes in the coming semesters with your iPhone, iPad, or any other app phone or tablet device is a natural progression in a technological world. Full and part-time students would be given the opportunity to carry out their quality of life obligations, such as their family duties or work responsibilities, and still have time to register for the very classes that are taken to increase their standard of living. The term first come, first served has been a fair way of doing business throughout the centuries, and though the benefits of a mobile registration site would fall solely on those who could afford such app devices, the need to attend the needs of an ever-changing and advancing student body will and cannot be denied. Class registration has been a survival of the fittest event, with the odds of successfully getting all necessary classes were in favor of those who had access to the college at the right time or a home computer. The creation of a mobile registration site would level the playing field across the board. Connecticut College, a liberal arts school on the East Coast, not only offers their students a mobile registration site, but a game console registration site as well. This is a marriage made in nerd heaven. Students can register for classes while taking a gamer's break from their PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and Nintendo Wii. All students would need to register by providing the MAC address on their devices to access either mobile or game console registration. Non-MAC devices also have a MAC address. With the computer era staking its claim on our everyday lives, the need for a mobile registration site here at Cerritos College would serve the student body twofold: undisrupted fulfillment of daily obligations while registering for classes, and effectively compelling said students to keep up with the technological times. For Telemark's Campus News Hour, I'm Campus NewsHour Director Tito Benavidez reporting.
This week's Talon Marks Campus NewsHour movie review aims its missiles at Cabin in the Woods. Assistant online editor Sarah Neiman shows absolutely no mercy on her opinion of this stink bomb film.
Cabin in the Woods is incredibly cheesy. Other than the gore factor, even a person who is terrified by horror movies can sit through this movie without breaking a sweat.
Everybody ready? Let's go on the road!
Doesn't even show up on the GPS. It's unworthy of global positioning.
That's the whole point. Get off the grid, right?
The most thrilling part of the movie was at the very beginning, when the audience gets a quick boost of adrenaline by the sudden unexpected flash of the title. Cabin in the Woods was director Drew Goddard's first shot at the silver screen, and he couldn't translate the unique storyline into the epic film it could have been. He turned what could have easily been an instant classic into something audiences shouldn't have to pay around $8 to go see.
I'm thinking this thing doesn't take credit cards.
Sign says closed.
We're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
Not to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
As you expect from any Lionsgate film, the blood and guts were there in abundance. It has the typical scary movie archetypes. The promiscuous girl, the jock, smart guy, etc. But it was all set up for the actual plot. Five young people go into the woods to party up for a weekend, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, it's setting up for the subplot of the movie.
The lambs have passed through the gate. They are come to the killing floor.
Let's get this party started!
I seriously believe something weird is going on.
There are tiny hints that are purposely meant to look like they just fall in place with an obvious plot, but they are there to make the audience start to catch on to the actual storyline. Unless you're someone who looks for hidden meanings and overanalyzes everything, you might miss a big chunk of those hints. To be considered a good movie, the average moviegoer has to believe the story and care about the characters. The plot has to be easily followed, pull them in, and make them want to stay to find out what happens next. The beginning and middle of the movie were as close to an epic fail as any movie could be, but the end almost makes the movie worth it. Almost. Don't write Cabin in the Woods completely off. It is definitely worth the dollar it will cost to go see in a few weeks after it tanks in the box office. For Talon Marks Campus NewsHour, I'm Assistant Online Editor Sarah Neiman reporting.
We gotta get out of here.
You are listening to Talon Marks Campus NewsHour on WPMD.org, Cerritos College, Norwalk, California. We'll be right back after these messages.
Do you know what to do when an earthquake hits? It's not the shaking that hurts, it's the stuff that falls on your head. Collapsing walls, flying glass, and falling objects cause most earthquake-related injuries. If you're inside, stay there. Take cover under a strong piece of furniture and hold on. If you're outdoors, move into an open area away from buildings, streetlights, and utility wires. Once in the open, stay there until the shaking stops. And if you're in a moving vehicle, find a clear area and stop quickly and stay in the vehicle. Once the shaking has stopped, proceed with caution. Avoid bridges or ramps that might have been damaged by the quake. Most of all, be prepared. This has been a public service announcement for WPMD 956, Cerritos College, Norwalk.
Okay, let's say you're at home watching TV when a show about the environment comes on, you know, air pollution and greenhouse gases. You get all conflicted because it's important, but you don't know how to help. You can be part of the solution. The fact is, your home can cause twice the greenhouse gases than your car. It's true. And that's why the EPA urges you to make your home more energy efficient with Energy Star to help in the fight against air pollution. Discover steps you can take to reduce air pollution from your home and car at EnergyStar.gov. That's EnergyStar.gov, and you'll know you're making a difference. A public service announcement from WPMD and Talon Marks Campus NewsHour. The first ever Cerritos College Hall of Fame ceremony was held at the Cerritos Sheraton Hotel. All Falcons, past and present, in attendance were witnesses to the greatness that Cerritos College has produced in its alumni. Sports editor Lauren Gandara reporting.
Faculty members, honorees, and their families attended the Cerritos College Hall of Fame Awards ceremony on Thursday at the Cerritos Sheraton Hotel. with Cerritos College's Culinary Arts Department catering and several of the Cerritos College music students performing, the attendees received a 3-course meal with music playing as they awaited for the award ceremony to start. Cerritos College Student Services Vice President Steve Johnson was the host for the ceremony as Cerritos College President Linda Lacey handed out the awards. As each person was called up to receive his award, a video interview was played in which he talked about his life before, during, and after Cerritos College. There were 7 awards given out. Barbara Reynaldo for Distinguished Female Athlete, Ron Yeary for Distinguished Male Athlete, Wally Kincaid for Distinguished Coach, GST for Distinguished Corporate Partner, Dr. Gerald P. Rudzent for Distinguished Alumnus, John Gallant for Distinguished Classified Confidential, and Edward Bloomfield for Distinguished Faculty. Reynaldo spoke about being recognized by Cerritos College.
Like I had said in the taping and things, it was the start of my whole career. Without things that transpired during my Cerritos years, I wouldn't be where I am today. If I hadn't been at Cerritos and had the article written in the LA Times after my first year that was sent back to Connecticut where I basically started my whole softball career, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't be in the Hall of Fames that I'm in. So everything falls back to Cerritos.
How does it feel to be recognized in the Hall of Fame by Cerritos College?
It's very special. It's very special. Cerritos was at the beginning of my playing days, and like I said, it really had pushed me in a direction that I really never dreamt of going. And it's put me where I am today.
Reynaldo was part of the first 2 Falcons softball teams in the school's history and was named MVP for both seasons. Then she went on to play for Cal Poly Pomona, spent 19 years pitching for the Raybestos Brackets in Starford, Connecticut, and then played for Team USA during the World Championships and Pan American Games. During her time with the Raybestos, Reynaldo was inducted into several Hall of Fames, including the National Softball Hall of Fame in 1999. She is currently in her 11th year as a softball coach for Yale University. Reynaldo tells Campus NewsHour what her plans are as the head softball coach at Yale.
My next goal probably is to be an Ivy League contender. Basically, is what I'm looking for now is in the coaching aspect, being a contender in the top leagues.
Another former athlete at Cerritos College, Ron Yeary, played a year for the Falcons football team. Yeary reflects on some of his memories here at Cerritos College.
I remember we had 9 games in a season, and we played a very difficult schedule. We played all the top teams, and we were expecting to have a great year, but I think we ended up with 5 victories and 4 losses, and which turned out to be somewhat of a disappointment. So that's what I remember. I don't remember too much of the individual action at all because it was, 47 years ago. So I played in so many football games and for so many years that they're kind of all merged together in my senior years here.
It has been 47 years since his time playing for Cerritos. After playing for Cerritos, he was then drafted by the University of Southern California. Okay. He said that playing for Cerritos helped him to prepare him for his future football career.
Back when I was a freshman in college, freshmen at 4-year colleges were not allowed to participate in games. And the competition that they had was below our standard, our level of competition. So by going to a junior college first, playing against better athletes got me ready to participate at a higher level the next year, which I was able to, and I was able to start as a sophomore at USC, a defensive end, because of the experience I had here at Cerritos College. And also, I wasn't really grown up or mature enough to go into a 4-year college at that time. So this was a great campus, a great orientation in preparation for the challenges that lie ahead of you. It was a good way to be introduced into studies and things of that nature.
He played as the Trojans' offensive lineman for 3 years and won both the Outland Award and the Newt Rockne Award his last year. He helped his team to win the national championships and, after USC, was the first offensive lineman to ever be drafted number 1 by the National Football League. He spent the next 14 years playing for the Vikings and was named All-Pro 6 times, All-National Football Conference for 8 straight seasons, played 7 straight Pro Bowls, and was named the NFC Offensive Lineman of the Year 3 times. He played his last year of football with the Los Angeles Rams in 1982. In 2001, Urie was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. As a former coach, during his thank you speech, Wally Kincaid was thankful for his times here at Cerritos College and joked about his possible future plans.
Well, it has been a great journey for me, and I'm still going to coach. I'm going to coach till I'm 90. I'm not sure who I'm going to coach for. And then I'm going to retire, and my wife and I are going to, I don't know now. She's a boss, and I really don't know.
Kincaid coached the Cerritos baseball team for over 40 years. Within those 40 years, he coached his team to multiple conference championships. In 1990, Cerritos College named its baseball field in honor of the former Falcon coach. Someone who also believes in giving back, Dr. Rudzin, said to Kincaid,
"Coach Kincaid, the truth be known, if I had had the opportunity to pitch baseball for you instead of going to dentistry, I would have done it to the Murphy. One of my regrets in life, not being able to pitch baseball."
Rudzin, who is a dental practitioner in the Whittier-La Mirada area, is involved in several foundations dedicated to giving back to the local community, including the Cerritos College Foundation. He said in his thank you speech,
"It takes a lot of people to set you on the right path. Cerritos College did that early on in my career academically. I'm a 16-year-old kid coming out of high school and immature. And the faculty and the counselors at Cerritos College, people like Chuck Tillman and Ed Buffalini and James Peters, really brought me from thinking like a kid from a protected school at Valley Christian to prepare me for college and university life. And that's what affects Cerritos College had on me early on. It was a stepping stone as I looked at it back then. Later on, I realized how much it gave me."
At the end of his acceptance speech, Rudzin concluded,
"And so we keep on doing what we are doing for Cerritos College, so that we can be the stepping stones for the next generation. Thank you. Thank you so much for the honor."
Another member of the foundation, JP and Alice Wang, both the owners of GST, are corporate partners with Cerritos College and provide the Alice Wang Scholarship for single mothers attending Cerritos College interested in child development. Alice Wang said that she and her husband feel the need to pay back to society, since her husband was able to get a better education due to receiving scholarships. The Wangs have been able to raise over $5 million for their scholarship. Alice Wang said about raising the money,
"Be honest to you, I didn't expect that I can raise that much money, but I just couldn't believe it. It just happened. Yeah, so I'm so happy too about I can raise that much money, and we still continue to, the money is continuous coming. So I hope one of these days we can even do much more than what we're doing right now."
While being happy about the money she raised, Alice also talked about her reaction to being inducted into the Cerritos College Hall of Fame. She said the reward of being acknowledged made her and her husband feel a sense of accomplishment and feels that she needs to do more for the Cerritos College Foundation. Distinguished Classified Confidential recipient John Gallant worked for Cerritos College for 35 years until his retirement in 2011. As a student at Cerritos College, he also became a husband and father. Looking for employment so that he could support his family while still being able to attend school, he first started working in the admissions and records office in 1976. Gallant worked in several different departments during his career at Cerritos College and was well known for being the MC at the Outstanding Classified Awards ceremony for 11 years in a row. The faculty even requested him to continue to MC the ceremony after his retirement. He served as an administrative assistant and mentor to 16 Cerritos College vice presidents.
"You know, Cerritos was my family. I came 40 years ago to go to school and never left. And I had the privilege of working at a place that I loved with people that I loved. And that doesn't happen to everybody."
He mentioned that he worked under 14 different bosses during his years at Cerritos and joked about all the different types of people he worked with. Also, having worked for Cerritos College for 35 years, distinguished faculty recipient Edward Bloomfield was a philosophy teacher. He began working for Cerritos College in 1968.
And if they had heard of philosophy at all, it would have been in a social studies or a history class where someone might have mentioned the Greeks or made a passing reference to Socrates or Plato or Aristotle. But what I tried to do was take the lid off and teach them that if you expand your ideas, you will enlarge your world, and that an idea is dynamite. It can be one of the most powerful experiences you will ever encounter.
During his tenure, he created a philosophy library in the philosophy department so that students with a passion for philosophy could have the opportunity to learn as much as possible. After retiring in 2003, Bloomfield then created the Edward H. Bloomfield Scholarship for Philosophy Majors. He talked about why he created the scholarship.
I felt that philosophy didn't get enough recognition on campus, and I wanted to do something significant, and I thought money is always a good thing.
Being such an involved and dedicated teacher, he said his greatest achievement was the friendships he developed with his former students.
I hear from former students from 40 years ago on a regular basis, and it really does light up my life.
He said that receiving the award made him think of all the other Cerritos College faculty that are devoted to students achieving their goals. To end the night, event host Stephen Johnson closed the award ceremony, paying homage to the night's recipients.
We leave tonight knowing that these seven individuals have established a lasting legacy for Cerritos College and have set the bar high for those who follow.
For Telemark's Campus NewsHour, I'm sports editor Lauren Gondara reporting.
This week's Campus NewsHour opinion section sets its sights on returning students and how Cerritos College should not offer free classes to these pupils alone. Staff writer Alexandra Scoville reporting.
Cerritos College should not offer free classes for returning students. There are other ways of assisting these students while remaining fair to others who are not returning students. Education is important for students of every age, and we all deserve classes. We should be receiving more affordable classes, but in this hard economic time, our tuition is being raised. The prices are higher than an average college student's budget. With this in mind, it seems foolish to allow some students an opportunity to take a free class when all want it. And what criteria allows returning students to possibly receive free classes? What allows them the opportunity for this service that other students don't have? Other students who are struggling to pay for one or two classes, students who seek help and find relief in financial aid. We are all Cerritos College students, and we all have the opportunity to apply for financial aid to pay for classes. Returning students can do this too, which would eliminate the need for free classes. Returning students are students who have previously attended a college and may have graduated or decided to take some personal time away and come back to school later on. With the time away, these students are at a disadvantage in the new material at college. It's not that they don't deserve support, they just need the right kind, and it's available. Cerritos College has a re-entry resource program that offers returning students the assistance throughout their education with services such as scholarships, free success workshops, and support groups. The help is there. Why would an addition of free classes be necessary? With all the recent protests across the state at colleges regarding tuition, it wouldn't be wise to offer free classes. That decision may present the thought of expense. Colleges are cutting programs and taking away classes, and Cerritos College is even starting to eliminate an entire summer semester for 2013. With that being said, free classes for returning students should be out of the question. It could cause more harm than good. To offer free classes to some students and not all would not sit well with the students who are not receiving these benefits. We as students should stand together and fight the raised tuition because we will never receive free classes, but we can fight for them to be more affordable. We are all students of Cerritos College, and we should all be treated equal. For Telemark's Campus News Hour, I'm staff writer Alexandra Scoville reporting.
Telemark's Campus News Hour continues to bring attention to all of the talented people broadcasting from WPMD.org, Cerritos College Radio. Mary Jane hosts Ari Fee Mind, a deep cut reggae music show. She has had legendary artists from This Genera, from Black Uhuru, and The Wailers as guests on her show. Assistant Sports Editor Martin Calderon reporting.
Reggae music is now available on the Cerritos College campus as well as the internet and is made possible by Irie Feemind, a show airing every Thursday from 9 to 11 a.m. on WPMD. The weekly show is hosted by Mary Jane, who features a mixture of reggae music from local and international artists. Mary Jane is a former student at Cerritos College and explains why she decides to play reggae music over any of the other genres that she enjoys.
I know that I started off with Bob Marley.
Okay.
And then I just, as I grew into his lyrics, I understood that, you know what, music should be exactly like this. It should tell us no worries, no cries. It should say, stay positive. It should say, look above. I mean, there's a higher source that takes care of us. And music, reggae music, does provide that, those words of wisdom, you know, not... I mean, in FM stations, you don't get that. I decided to go full force 2 years ago for reggae. I'm like a sponge, and I'm soaking up all this knowledge of reggae music, you know? I mean, it wasn't like this in the beginning.
She says the show features guests that support reggae music and have included guests that are widely known to reggae enthusiasts.
All these artists are Jamaican-born. So Bushman, Jodian Pantry, Susan Catagon... also interviewed Haile Mascal not too long ago, and also Garth Dennis, which was pumped from the Wailing Souls and Black Uhuru in the beginning. So it's roots. It's all about the roots.
Jane says her love for reggae could have possibly been ignited by hearing Bob Marley on local radio station K-Rock. She is now responsible for creating her own two-hour radio show, which includes putting together a playlist, promotional ads, interviews, and marketing a brand. The show's name, Irie Femind, was created by Mary Jane and a friend in high school and comes from the Jamaican word Irie, the state of feeling great, and the combination of abbreviations for female and mind to create Femind. Jane decided on the show's theme over a year and a half ago when she began it as a student at Cerritos College and talks about some of the difficulties.
So once you, maybe the first year, 2 years of it, it's kind of rough because you're trying to find yourself into what you want to represent. Where's your passion? Because there's a lot of different genres of information you can throw out. But you can't scatter yourself. You got to kind of focus on one thing and let the others do the rest.
She mentions how working with young students at WPMD's radio station is a great chance to share some of the things she has experienced when hosting and producing her own show.
When it comes to anybody wanting to spread the word about truth, about news, about their passion about something, you know, radio is the way to do it. And if somebody has a passion, look, they have the classes, it wouldn't be worth it if you didn't have a radio station, because you got to utilize this, all the equipment there. Once you get to the big dog stations, it's going to be a piece of cake. I think radio and broadcasting, it's kind of falling down because there's a lot of internet, but we can utilize it still. We could still educate the kids and how to represent themselves in the right manner.
According to Jane, there are benefits that come with all the hard work of putting together a show, such as establishing friendships with past guests. Mary Jane, born Marie Flores, explains how she got her stage name.
Mary Jane was given to me in high school, MJ, as we all were young, and we enjoyed one thing, that was just being on a better level, always being happy. So yes, Irie. Well, officially, my name is given by my mother, and she calls me Marie. Marie. And
okay.
I've always been told Maria, and it's like, no, it's Marie. So get it right.
One of her favorite parts of hosting a show is when she puts on a set of headphones and just vibes to the music. Irie Femind can be heard on campus or at WPMD.org. For Talent Marks Campus News Hour, this is Assistant Sports Editor Martin Calderon reporting.
Tough times for the men's tennis team by being humbled at the hands of Santa Barbara Community College. Although there was a defeat, there was some silver lining with a big win for the Falcons. Staff writer Juan Lopez reporting.
Cerritos College men's tennis suffered a loss to Santa Barbara Community College Tuesday at home. Santa Barbara was able to win 5 of the 6 singles tennis matches at Tuesday's game, while Cerritos won only one singles match. A match that was won by Cerritos' Chris Nui, who delivered Santa Barbara's Miles Seaman his first loss since the season began with a score of 4-6 in the first set, 6-4 during the second set, and Nui sealing his victory with 10-3 in the third set. Men's and women's tennis head coach at Cerritos College, Alvin Kim, says,
That was a really big win for Chris Nui, our number one, to beat Miles Seaman, who's, you know, number one for a very good team. We've been trying to fight for seedings individually for the regional tournaments coming up, and so that really helps him.
Nui's teammate Kyle Porter did not fare so well with 6-0, 6-1 loss against Santa Barbara's Joshua Crisp Jones. Porter says that his opponent...
Yeah, he's a really skilled player. He showed me that I have a lot to work on.
Were there any problems that you feel you need to work on?
Just my return to serve. It's just good practice playing a good player like that for the future matches I'm going to have.
Porter added that his return serve needed more work. Todd Jenkins was able to win the second set of the match for the Falcons, but was not able to secure his victory in the third set with scores of 6-1, 4-6, and 11-9. Jenkins talked about what he does before the match.
Today I just put in the practice needed. I came in with a strong mental game. There's nothing you can really do until you actually face your opponent. You know, you prepare the best you can, warm up your strokes, everything needed. Hydrate, just do all that before, and then, you know, hope for the best.
He explained his match against Santa Barbara's Troy Aiken by saying,
I struggled the first set. I only got one game the first set, and then the next set I really picked up my game and pulled it together. And after that first set, it was an entirely close match.
Jenkins feels that major issues he should work more on are his footwork, how he approaches the ball, and serving. Kim says Santa Barbara has a really good team this year and is definitely one of the top 10 teams in the state. He thinks that Cerritos tennis team is doing better.
I think as a team we're doing better, and especially towards the end of the season, we've been working a lot harder. It's not really something that our team's been doing poorly. I think that the depth of men's tennis this year is really deep.
According to Kim, some of the top colleges that the men's tennis team has faced this season are Mount San Jacinto College and Ventura College. It's no surprise that these colleges are a challenge, since Mount San Jacinto is currently number 2 in Southern California and Ventura College comes in at number 3. The loss brings Cerritos' men's tennis record to 11-9 for the season. The South Coast Conference Tournament will be hosted at Cerritos all day on Thursday and Friday. For Telemarketing Campus NewsHour, I'm staff writer Juan Lopez reporting.
Both Cerritos and Citrus Colleges have come together musically with the Pop Rock Exchange. This event serves to bring attention to the music departments of both campuses. Staff writer Wilmer Vargas and freelance writer Jessica Perez reporting.
On Thursday, April 12th, the Cerritos College and Citrus College Pop Rock Band were brought together for a musical meet at the Student Center for a night of music, networking, and socializing. The schools regularly play music department, faculty, and student body casted concert. This recent meeting of two college bands was an idea conceived a month ago by Cerritos College Director of Bands and Orchestras, Dr. Benincourt, and the Citrus College Music Department faculty. It serves as a means to address the lack of exposure between college music departments and to increase the number of networking events for Cerritos College music majors.
The neat thing was for both groups to get to hear a different group that does the same thing, because there's not very many colleges, community, or four-year schools that do this kind of ensemble. So we're pretty unique in that respect. So to get another school that does it, does a pop rock sort of group, that was really nice. So to hear what they're doing and they get to hear what we're doing, to bring the audience together, to make new friends, and, you know, just... that all was positive stuff.
This event was oriented for music majors, but even undecided majors like Jessica Clark from Citrus College found the event to be a positive experience. She explained how the event allowed her to see the reputation held by the Cerritos College Music Department in the Drum and Bugle Corps International Circuit come to life on stage.
And yeah, I thought it was a really cool idea when I heard about it. I was really curious to see how Cerritos was, and it was awesome. They were really great.
In exchange, the Cerritos Music Department got a first-hand look at the high energy and quality that precedes the Citrus College Pop Rock Band. Clark credits the broad spectrum of education in the music industry that Citrus College offers to its students as the reason behind the high quality of their performances. Instructor Gino Munoz contributes to that spectrum in teaching to develop both the strong work and social ethics in relation to the mastership of a musical art.
Number one is work ethic, working really hard. These kids spend a lot of time. I mean, we really emphasize at the college, practicing, minimum 8 hours a day. And on top of that, doing rehearsals and, then doing homework that they have to do for the college. So it's probably work ethic, and probably up there with it is just being a good human being, Those are the big ones.
These were some of the principles and ideas that were exchanged in the aftermath of the event, where both campuses got an opportunity to connect and trade ideas during friendly conversations. While this particular performance has passed, Dr. Betancourt states that many more meetings are planned in the future to continue musical exchanges already experienced by the chorus and jazz ensemble at Cerritos. Students like Joanna Gutierrez really enjoyed the energy created by the bands and look forward to any future band exchanges.
I was actually brought here by a mutual friend of one of the performers, but I really liked the event. I never knew that some things like this occurred at Cerritos, and it would be nice to see what kind of chemistries are created when other bands come to play at our school. There was a small sense of rivalry felt between Citrus and Cerritos before and after each one went on stage, but I think it was a friendly rivalry. I think that suits the event better than for it to be a full-blown competition.
Reporting for Wilmer Vargas, I'm freelance staff writer Jessica Perez for Talon Mark's Campus News Hour.
This has been the 13th installment of Talon Mark's Campus News Hour for the spring semester of 2012 here on WPMD.org on the net. We thank you for listening and would like to remind you to pick up the latest printed edition of Talon Mark's at news racks located throughout the campus. We would also like to invite you to log on to talonmark.com for the latest and breaking news here at Cerritos College. On behalf of the Talon Mark's news staff, I'm Campus News Hour Director Tito Benavidez. Have a great day, Falcons.